Yeshus Marina Rav Shlisa. There are three kinds of mitzvahs. There are the Eidos, Chukim, and Mishpatim. Eidos, testimony, you're a witness. You get lots of mitzvahs such as Shabbos, Matzah, Sukkah, Mezuzah, Tefillin. They're all there to remind you of something which has happened, to commemorate something, primarily at Tzias Mitzrayim. That's Eidos. We can understand them fully. Their rationale is easy for us to absorb. And then you have the Chukim. The Chukim, the statutes we call it in English, they don't have a reason given by the Torah. Eating chaza, kosher generally. Kilayim, shatnas is one of them. Chalitza is another. Parah aduma is a well-known chok, which Shlomo HaMelech said is the only mitzvah he could not work out the reason for. And the Netziv writes in Vayikra Yutes, that where it says eschukosai tishmoru, is primarily referring to shatnas, because that's the most common kind of chok, a mitzvah which has not got a reason. The third kind, mishpatim are like dinei momonos, mandatory matters, mitzvahs feinodan lachaveiro. Again, those are very easy to understand why we should engage in mishpatim. You may not steal and so on. But even with dinei momonos, even with mishpatim, although we know the reasons, and with eidos we know the reasons, the purpose of doing these mitzvahs is the rotzon habore. They are the wish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we do them. And that's why we do them. Well, and the Chukim is the same thing. So although we don't understand the reasons for the Chukim, we do them because that is Hashem's wish, and we are here to perform the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In terms of Emunah, although people say, I believe, Emunah is a rational concept. We say, and you shall know today. Emunah is rational. When you learn Sfarim like the Kuzari, it gives a rationality to keeping the mitzvahs. And Avraham Avinu, with his own rational mind, came to the conclusion that there is a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just by studying nature. But if a person has a doubt in their mind as to why he's doing a particular mitzvah, then maybe he can be comforted by the fact that if you just imagine a sefer going on a table, and part of that sefer is not supported, because if it's not fully on the table, part of it is hanging over the edge, that part which is hanging over the edge, it's not falling down, because the weight of what remains on the table is holding up the rest of it. So you can say that just as I understand the rationality of Eidos and Mishpatim, I do not understand the Chukim, but that part, although it's not supported by reason, is held up by the rest. A person can work, though, towards the Madrega that the whole Sefer is on the table, that he feels he can understand even those Chukim which the Torah does not give a reason for, and that his whole Yiddishkeit is 100% with a basis. But that's the philosophy of it. There are higher reasons for all the mitzvahs. So even when we know a reason, we don't realize that there are many more. As well as the Torah, there's also the Din and Drabbanon. For every reason they gave us, there were a few which they didn't give us. The reason why we're called a Goy Kodosh, a holy nation, says Rabbeinu Bechai in the Kadar Kemach on Tzitzis, is because we keep those mitzvahs which the Goyim scoff us about. They laugh at us. I remember when I was a pupil in Hasmonean Grammar School, and there was a proposed speech day taking place, and all the teachers got ready their black gowns and mortarboards from their university colours or whatever it is, and Rabbi Dr. Gerber discovered that the gowns that they were due to wear contained shatnas. And there was a non-Jewish teacher who was teaching us economics who was extremely disappointed about it. And he told us that, quite honestly, he just could not understand why he couldn't wear his gown. Well, he could wear his gown, he wasn't Jewish. But he couldn't understand, and he looked it up in the Chumash, and it says there, you may not wear wool and linen together. But for him, it was completely incomprehensible. For us, it's the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's also incomprehensible. Although we will explore certain concepts and reasons given by Mefarshim on the subject of shatnas. And the Goyim have tried to ensnare us. Achashverosh, in fact, in the Gilas Esther, it says, Chur kapasus acheles, ochuz bechadli vutz v'argomon. Vutz is linen, argomon is wool. He tried to ensnare us to do an Aveira. And for us, people who do not appreciate the importance of various mitzvahs, it's easy to fall into the trap. There are indeed some people who think that Shabbos is just a chumrah. There are women who believe that it doesn't apply to them. It applies equally to women, just as it applies to men. So Rav Yonasan Eibeshit says, everything which is a chok, kol davar shu chok, inyan gadol ma'od bebris am Yisrael. So Hashem's bris, his covenant with the Jews, primarily rests on the fact that we are doing his will when it comes to the chukim. And just like it creates a special bond between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there are serious side effects. We're going to go in more detail later, but the Shachim, Kedoshim, and there are others who say that when you are wearing shatnas, your tefillahs do not go up to Shemayim at all. Your prayers are not heard. Yes?
In that case, yes. How is it with the certain God?
Rav Dessler asks this question in Chelek Dalad of the Mikta Melio. I'll come to that, but it's true that not only with Big Day Kahuna, but even with tzitzis, midaraisa, if you have a linen garment and woolen threads of tzitzis, or even indeed the other way round, then you are not committing an isadaraisa. So there is an apparent paradox there. I'll come to Rav Dessler in a few minutes. He discusses this in Mikta Melio. So if you imagine magnets which easily cling to each other, if you turn round the magnet, then there's a negative pull that they've forced away from each other. And this is the spiritual effect of shatnas, that it stops your tefillahs going up to Shemayim. And Hashem does not use his midas rachamim, says the Rambam in Kilayim Perek Tes, for those people who are wearing shatnas. Now there are two pesukim about shatnas. One is in Kedoshim, Veged Kilayim Shatnez Lo Yaaleh Olecho, you may not put it on you, Lo Yaaleh, shall not be mounted upon you. And then in Parshas Kisetzeh, Lo Subash Shatnez, you may not wear Shatnez, Tzenet Ufishtim Yachdog, it explicitly states wool and linen together. And when we say wool, we only mean sheep's wool. It doesn't include hair from camels or rabbits or goats. There are some materials which come from these, like cashmere and so on. Angora, other materials, it relates entirely to the wool of sheep, rams, family. So that is the issur. Linen is from flax which grows from the ground, and the Mefarshim talk about the mixing of the animal life with the plant life. We'll come to that in a moment. But even if shatnez is owned by a Gentile and you're burying your jacket or something, you are not allowed to wear it if it contains shatnez. And the issur of shatnez is kol rega varega, every single second that you're wearing it. So you're doing a multitude of averus. If you compare that with, say, alright, one shouldn't talk Lashon Hara, but if one talks Lashon Hara and it lasts 5 seconds, you can imagine when you're wearing shatnas, it's how many seconds in a day you're wearing shatnas. So the Gemara Makkos, Kafala from a base in the Rambam, compares this with other sins which might only last for a few minutes, and this might be going on for a whole day. The Gemara Yevamos Daf Hei explains the reason, the idea behind the word shatnas, Shua Tuvi Nuz. What does that mean? Shura Tuvi Nuz, combed, spun, twined. That in order to become shatnas, that thread would have had that process done with it. Combed, spun, twined. And there are poskim such as the Rambam in Perek Yud and Hilchos Kalayim, who says even if it's just one of those processes, that will render it an ingredient of shatnas. Rabbeinu Tam and the Ramon Simon Shin Aleph says even if you've got completely individual materials, but they are later joined, it's shatnas. Rabbinical law prohibits shatnas even if it's not combed, spun, or twined. And that would be asur as well. But that's a din d'rabbanan. So let's just try for a moment and look at some of the reasons given by the Mefarshim Chazal as to why we don't wear shatnas, even though it's a chok, even though it hasn't got a reason given by the Torah. The Midrash Tanchuma in Bereishis Tes and also the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar bring down that the very first machlokas we learn about in the Torah was between Cain and Hevel. Cain unfortunately killed his brother Hevel, and it all stemmed from the offerings. Cain brought flax. He brought what was basically the ingredient of linen, what was something growing from the ground. And Hevel offered an animal, and so you've got there the plant life and the animal life, and you've got the first machlokas in human history. So the Zohar also says this in Parshas Kedoshim, that that is the root cause of not wearing shatnas. And both of them lost out. Well, Cain was punished because he killed Hevel. Hevel lost out because he died from the experience. So what was wrong? What were they doing? Hevel, Hashem enjoyed Hevel's offering. So what was Hevel doing wrong? Was he doing a sin? So the Maharal says that the issue of Cain relating to a midah of Gevurah, his the flats that he brought and the personality of Cain, he was somebody who had the mitzvah of gevurah. Gevurah is might. Gevurah is being passionate about something. And Hevel had the mitzvah of chesed. Chesed is kindness. And this is where Rav Dessler comes in, Michael, which you pointed out. In Michtam Melio, Chelik Dalet, page 175, he looks at this concept that the Maharal brings between gevurah and chesed. It's a bit Kabbalistic and mystical, but he says that each one on their own is no good. When you have gevurah, you can be passionate about doing your mitzvahs, but it has to be tempered with your chesed, so that you're not aggressive. And if your gevurah goes out of hand, that is what leads to you doing averus. If you are very nice to other people with chesed, you might be overly nice to yourself, and therefore be lenient to yourself about the averus which you might fall into. So your chesed might go astray off on a tangent. So a person has to have this combination of gevurah and chesed, being someone who's forceful, but also someone who is soft and kind. With your gevurah, you might do bad things, you might steal, you might even murder, but you can do good things by forcing yourself in self-control, by having yirat shamayim. That comes from gevurah. Chesed, your kindness, is tempering your gevurah into a soft way, but if it's too excessive, you will go astray with it by being soft with yourself. Hence the balance. Hashem is telling us that you need to strike a balance in your lifestyle between gevurah and chesed. Cain resembles the gevurah, Hevel resembles the chesed. Really, neither of them on their own is 100%. You have to balance the two. Hence, says the Maharal, we got our descendancy from Shais, hushtas for Olam, that he coordinated the world, he created perfection to the world by combining this gevurah and chesed. So ask Rav Dessler, why are you allowed to have shatnas midaraisa in tzitzis? Midrabanan, the Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't wear nowadays tzitzis with shatnas. We don't have the tcheles and so on. You can't do the mitzvah completely properly. And the big day kahuna, why a big day kahuna? So he says that when chesed and gevurah come together for kedusha, for holiness, with the right combination, then it's okay. Otherwise, it's not okay. That is the rationale behind the shatnas in the tzitzis and the big day kuna. And the Ritbaz writes in the mitzvah Reishon Amadalad, he says shatnas has the same letters as soton a's, if you jumble around the letters. Soton a's is chutzpedik. The soton is cheeky and trying to tell us to do averus, and the concept of shatnas is where the soton easily tempts us with his cheek by saying, come on, you're not really doing anything wrong. Lasted Lavo, sometime in the future, Megalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tamei Torah L'Yisrael, Hashem is going to reveal the secrets of the Torah to Klal Yisrael. This is in the Otzer Midrashim, Ayin Dalet, and it says that is referring specifically to Kilayim, to Shatnas, where one day in the future we will know the reasons. The Rambam writes in Meron Avuchim, and also in the Sefer HaMitzvot, that the reason why we don't wear shatnas is because this was always the clothing worn by idolatrous priests. The people of the Kohen Avodah Zorah who would officiate on their idolatry would customarily wear shatnas clothes, and that is why the Torah asks us to avoid shatnas. This is also in the Ramban in Parshas Kedoshim. The Sefer Achinuch brings it down as well. Another reason given for the prohibition is that in the Beis HaMikdash, the paroches was made with wool and linen. And Hashem doesn't want us to do anything which resembles something as holy as the paroches in the Beis HaMikdash. It's like an issur not to build a house which looks like the Beis HaMikdash. The Das HaKenim says this in Parshas Devarim. The Chizkuni says you wouldn't use the king's scepter. It's something reserved solely for the king. And the paroches of the Beis HaMikdash was made with both wool and linen, so we have an issur of shatnas in that we're not doing anything which might imitate the process. So these are reasons or ideas given by the Foshim, but they're not actual reasons because it's a chok. The chok is that there's no reason given by the Torah, but all this gives us some idea as to where we're pointing to, as to why the Torah gave this. So there are a number of practical ideas which come out from the rules of shatnas. And unfortunately, people have lots of wrong assumptions. They think that linen is something expensive, and therefore only expensive suits contain shatnas, and in the cheap suits you don't find shatnas. Unfortunately, that's not correct. In fact, linen is quite cheap in Eastern Europe, and a lot of the suits which come from Eastern Europe contain shatnas. I've got a safe which says that as many as 50% of the suits which come from Eastern Europe are shatnas, even though in the Western world you might only get, say, 10 to 20%. But even if it's that proportion, you know, you still run the risk. So it's very important to have clothing checked. And in recent years, people have moved away a lot from synthetic materials, such as polyester, vicose, and chivira, and wanting more natural garments. Linen is in fact a material which is light and it's also strong. It absorbs perspiration, so there are many benefits about it, where it's easily coordinated with wool, and it only needs one thread. There's no such thing as bottle barove when it comes to shatnas. There might be one small exception which I'll come to later, but the general principle is that even if you've only got one thread of linen in a woolen garment, the whole lot may not be worn. It's an issa d'oraisa. It is something which, you know, nobody here would eat chaza, nobody would eat pork, but shatnas is an issa d'oraisa, just like eating pork is. It's the same thing. In fact, as we said, eat pork, it lasts for a few seconds. When you ain't shatnas, it's on and on and on. It's much worse. And the problem is that there are many tailors who don't always know when they see shatnas, because nowadays production and manufacturing has become so sophisticated that you sometimes get materials where within the actual fabric you don't have a piece of wool and a piece of linen, but the actual thread might be twined with both wool and linen inside it. For a while they were displaying a cardigan in the shatna centre which looked like completely woolen cardigan, but it was the whole essence of it was shatnas. There was no way that the shatnas tester could take out anything to render it to be kosher, because it was so integral to the fabric itself. And that is something which one has to be careful for. And we're going to look at the subject of to what extent can you trust other people. Henry was telling me about a tailor who knew all about shatnas, who made suits for his father, and the people who are Yirei Shamayim, but they might not be sufficiently trained to know and to understand where to find shatnas. As many as 52 places in a suit can be shatnas, hence the complications. So even if somebody studied chemistry and knows what linen is and so on, do they always know where to look? In fact, Rav Michal Ehrlich writes in a sefer about shatnas that he found in a suit which was shatnas tested, and on it he found a label, Lelo Chashash Shatnas, there is no problem of shatnas in this suit, and he discovered that the thread with which that label was sewn into was a linen thread. I mentioned briefly before that women have to keep the din of shatnas just like men. Years ago I once met a young lady who just didn't know this. She grew up in a frum family, albeit it was on the continent, that she didn't know that women have to keep shatnas just like men. She thought, well, maybe it's a chumrah or a minhag. She didn't know that she had to keep shatnas. So I told her this bit about, you know, do you eat chaza, do you eat pork or ham sandwiches? And she immediately took her whole wardrobe to the shatnas tester. He got quite a shock when this lady came round with her complete wardrobe, but there's always a way of remedying things. There was some, yes. So, can a woman check for shatnas? Well, if she's sufficiently trained, if a woman is Yirat Shemayim and she's Muchzekes B'Kashrus, just like with a man, if a person is Muchzak B'Kashrus, then you can trust them to say that there is no shatnas, just like to say that food is kosher, Eidechod Ne'eman V'Yisurin. But it's got to be somebody who's completely Muchzak B'Kashrus. And if a person's from, it's not always enough. It's not enough. When I was at the tender age of 16, it was another dimension of my life, and I was performing at the Ezra Chanukah show, and part of my remit was to dress up with tails, you know, bow tie and all that. So, eschatua ani maskir hayom. And I arranged to hire one of these morning suits with tails. And there was a frum man who was running a clothes hire firm in the West End, and I phoned him up, and I said to him, can I be sure that anything I hire will not contain shatnas? And he said, it's no problem, I've got two or three versions which are okay, they're tested. And I came round to his shop, and he said to me, "Here you are, you see," and there was a Mogen David written inside the sleeve. Because I said to him, "How do I know this one is kosher as compared to all the other ones?" He said, "Well, I've identified them. It's got a Mogen David in it." And I trusted him. According to the Sefer, number of times, Shatnas Alok Alamaisa, it's not good enough. Now, all right, it may have been that it was okay. But really, because people who are selling and hiring, they don't know the intricacies and the sophistication of production techniques. They might think that it's not got Shatnas. But really, if you hire something, it might be a problem because they might not like it when you take it to Shatnas testing. But they retail so well nowadays that nobody will notice. But you really have, if you hire something like that, you have to take it to the Shatnas Centre. They've got an express service for one day, get it looked over, and then wear it for your fancy dress or Hanukkah show, whatever it is. But it's a problem also with Purim. People hire things for their fancy dress and they don't realise that they might contain Shatnas. And it's something of which one has to be really careful. So the Shatnas tester might get a surprise when you bring in this gorilla suit. But, okay, he's there to do a service.
Can we rely on labels that say 100%
wool? Definitely not. In this country, there are different countries with rules about the word pure. When it comes to clothing, 2% of materials, according to one Zohar I've seen, do not have to be described in the content. 2%, and that, you only need one thread to create something Shatnas. So if you see 100% wool, it's not good enough. The lining is sometimes missed out from ingredients, and it's a real trap people fall into. Oh, it says 100% wool, it's okay. And even if your suit says 100% polyester, you might have a problem, because it's not talking about the stiffening in the shoulders and in the collars as to what's going in there and what they're made of. I know one Rav in Golders Green, a Rav of a Kehillah, who once had this feeling, he just had this gut feeling that maybe something wasn't right with something in his wardrobe, and he decided to call somebody in to check everything he had. And he got a shock to discover that two or three of his ties had wool and linen inside them. And, you know, you wouldn't think it when you buy a tie, but that is the sad thing about it. And even if you're buying a tie, you know, if it's a silk tie, you think, well, silk is not wool or linen, but you don't know what lining is inside. And there's a risk. Yes?
Given there another thing that there's nothing wrong with releasing or sewing something made of Shatnas, the Israel to wear it. So if you've got a kosher,
yes,
who's in the clothing industry, there's really nothing wrong with him making clothing which is Shatnas, because, you know, he's not doing the Israel. The Israel is the person who's wearing it. And from that point, it makes it even worse for people to make sure they check their inventory.
You are allowed to have Hanor from Shatnas. So you are allowed to make it. But if you have reason to believe that it will end up in Jewish hands, then you should avoid doing so. Even if you say there is no iver sitei michshel, putting a stumbling block before the blind, because a person who might not buy from you might buy from somebody else, there is still the din of masayale. And Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva about selling, we'll come to that in a moment, but generally speaking, although you're allowed to have hanor, if you have reason to believe that it will end up being worn by a Jew who doesn't care too much about Shatnas, who won't get it tested, then you have to be careful.
The person testing,
yes,
what authority can we look to? I had experience when I bought a suit in California. I had to have Shatnas tested. It's fine. Brought it back here and it's looking Shatnas.
There is a problem. I know that some years ago in Manchester there was a problem with the official Shatnas tester. That was in London as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
Certainly we put our trust in our Rabbonim, and there is a Kedusha Hefshar on the one locally. You're not expected to go around for second opinions if you've got someone who's musmach and who's reliable, but... You are then doing an Isra B'Shogeg. You're still committing a prohibition, but it's unintentional. And one has to avoid doing an unintentional, certainly. It is a problem, and we have to hope that these people who are guaranteeing Shatnas and putting their labels in are reliable. But I'll tell you a story about somebody. There was a yeshiva bacher in Mir when it was in Shanghai in China. The yeshiva escaped from the Nazis and settled during the war in Shanghai, and there was a yeshiva bacher who bought a suit and had it tested, and he was told it's okay, and he was davening on Yom Kippur, and he just felt as though that the prayers were not coming out from his mouth. He just felt there was something wrong. He didn't know what it was, and he had this feeling that maybe although this suit, which was brand new, was tested, maybe it was something to do with that. So he went to his bedroom and he changed into his big day chol on Yom Kippur, into his sweater and jeans or whatever it was, and he came back into the Beit HaMidrash despite the embarrassment, and he suddenly felt that the prayers were coming out of his mouth smoothly. And after Yom Kippur, the suit was retested by somebody else and shatnez was found in it. Rav Vikanti in his Perish Al HaTorah says, and this is brought by the Shachu we quoted before, that if a person is wearing shatnez, his tefillahs are not really even being released. Now, that might not be an easy guide for us, but it gave him some sort of barometer to try and do something about it. And the Tzlach writes in his Drushim that if a person puts on shatnez, not only is the tefillahs not heard, but once he's taken off the shatnez, for 40 more days his tefillahs will not be heard. It's a bit like recovering from, say, drugs, that it's still in your bloodstream, it's still in your system, and it takes time to get out. And the Tzlach says that it takes 40 days till your tefillahs become heard again. So, yeah, it's a big problem, and we have to be ultra careful. Another problem which arises, you were talking about labels before, sometimes you come across a label which says recycled fibres. And what does that mean? What is recycled fibres? And there are a lot of poskim who write about bilei begodim. Bilayim are like the rubbish, that it's like crushed up or ground up, lots of rubbish materials pressed together. And there are different kinds of how they do this, but I once took a suit for shatnez testing to Bell's in Stamford Hill. They have a centre there. It was before the local one opened, and I can't remember exactly why, but I went to Bell's on another, and he found in this suit what he called beloim, where it's this stuffing which they put on the shoulders, and it looks like it's a bit woolly, but it's all different materials crushed up or ground up and then kind of pasted together. And there are a number of poskim, particularly Brian Weiss asks about this in the Shutz Minchas Yitzchok in Chelik Beis Simen Chaf Hei, and he says Me'ikadin, it's okay to wear this, and most shatnez testers do not remove it, this bilei begodim, because it's not recognizable. You no longer got your one thread of linen, because it's so crushed up you no longer have any threads at all. It's so minute. We were talking before about if something might be botel. That is, according to Dayan Weiss, something which is botel. There is a kula there. Unless there are recognizable threads. If that crushed up material has recognizable threads, then that heter does not apply. Nevertheless, says Dayan Weiss, yesh lahachmir, one should try the machmir. And this guy I went to in Bells in Stamford, he was machmir on bilei begodim, even though other shatnez testers aren't. So once you're wearing shatnez, even if it's not touching your skin, there is still an issur. On the other hand, there are other things which are not clothing, where you might get warmth for your skin. You should avoid having them shatnez. Even your talus and tefillin bag, you're holding them and they're giving you warmth, then if they're shatnez, you're committing an issur. It's written that the cloth which covers the bima, on which you rest the Sefer Torah, should not contain shatnez. People put their hands in it, it gives a certain bodily warmth. It should be avoided. Now, you asked about selling shatnez. If there is a chashash shatnez, so you don't know if the suit's got linen in it, woolen linen in it or not, can you sell it to a Jew who is not Shema Torah mitzvahs? You don't know for sure. If you know for sure, definitely you can't sell it. So Rav Moshe Feinstein asks about this in Yoredei Chelek Aleph at the end of Siman Ein Beis, and he says, unless there is a general chazokah that suits in that area do not contain shatnez, you do not sell a chashash shatnez, a possible doubt, to somebody who is not likely to keep the mitzvah properly. Now, what about trying on a suit? If you go into a shop, you know, you don't know if it fits, you have to try it on. If you try it on, it hasn't been shatnez tested yet, can you try it on? The Tur and the Ramah say it's okay. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir, he says you shouldn't. So there's an argument there between the Rishonim, but the general view is that you're allowed to try something on, you have the kavanah not to have any physical benefit out of it, just to make sure that the size fits. Rav Neuwirth, well known for his Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa, he writes that he makes a difference between a jacket and with trousers. Why? Because with a jacket, it doesn't make much difference to you when you've got your other clothes on. When you put a jacket on or you take it off, so you have in mind not to have hatnor from it. But when it comes to wearing a pair of trousers, you're not going to walk around in the shop without those trousers. You're definitely not. You're going to have an embarrassment by walking around without any trousers on. So by wearing those trousers, you're automatically getting a hatnor. So he's worried about trying on trousers and suggests that you should be machmir when it comes to that.
Are you suggesting, therefore, that even if you don't own it, because obviously if you try it on in the shop, you haven't yet bought it?
There is no difference on shatnas whether you own it or you don't. There is an issur. Even if a guy lends to you a jacket, then there's an issur of shatnas if it's got woolen linen. It makes no difference if you own it or you don't.
What does it make a difference?
Oh, that's an interesting point. According to Rav Neuwirth, to try on the trousers privately in the cubicle, you don't suffer any embarrassment when... okay, well, I'm not here to paskin, but that might well fall into place. Certainly, you try on quickly, you take it off, and you know if it fits, and you've got no physical benefit.
It's about mattresses and car seats and bus seats and
yeah, there are sforim who write about mattresses and car seats and so on. It's not usually motzoi nowadays to have mattresses made with shatnas, and the olam no noagim came to be checking with mattresses, but there are some famous stories about great rabbonim like the Chofetz Chaim, Rav Nachman Wasserman. They went on a wagon and they would not sit or lie down on the bench where they saw it was a plain material, and they were worried about shatnas. And they stood for the whole journey. Yeah, if you are clothed and you... If you can sit on a chair or whatever, when you're fully clothed and you're attaching a material which is shatnas, you're not doing an issur. Although there are people who are machmirim. The problem is if your skin is touching it, yes.
It used to be an advert in the Tribune.
Shatnas-free mattresses. Yeah. It's a good selling point.
This shatnas doesn't apply to all other accessories like gloves, socks, hats.
It does. It applies to gloves, it applies to socks, it applies to these hats, these balaclavas, these ones which the Russians wear, which come over the ears. Those could easily contain shatnas, and they should be checked. Yeah?
They're fabric shoes as well.
Shoes, you can't have shatnas in shoes. I mean, slippers might give you bodily warmth, and they're made of soft material. They should not, generally speaking, you don't usually get synthetic materials on things like slippers, but you're not allowed to wear shatnas in any of these items. So we were talking about great Rabbonim who went out of their way to make sure that there was no shatnas being worn. Rav Yaakov Kanievsky, who was the Stipe Blagon, in his youth he was actually drafted into the Russian army, where of course the weather in winter was extremely cold, and he made a request that for his army uniform he wears the summer version in the winter, because he had the chashash that the winter uniform was made with shatnas, and he asked to wear the summer uniform even though it was very cold and it was not easy for him to wear. So
he could wear four of them.
I beg your pardon?
Wear four of them.
Yeah, you wear different layers of clothing. But
a linen garment and a garment.
Yes, you may wear, there is a chumra about it, but you may wear two different garments, which of course are not attached to each other in any way, not even with a safety pin, which one is wool and one is linen. There's no issur in that, on top of each other. Yes, that's allowed. But once you start connecting the two, even if it's just with a safety pin, then that's forbidden.
So what happens with the material
before they're disappointed? I beg your pardon?
When the wool suits are said to be only polyester, do you still mistrust it in line with what you said before? Because
you don't know with any suit what has been used for these bits of stiffening, like in the collar, and you, the thread, what is sewn on with the buttons, and if there's just a tiny bit of wool in your collar and your buttons are sewn on with a linen thread, you're wearing shatnas. So it's very problematic. What's really problematic is some of these suits which have decorative stitching on the sides of the lapels, and if you pull that out, you ruin the whole suit completely. And it's a risk buying such suits if that material is linen. I was once in the shatnas centre in the queue, and there was a man in front of me complaining that his label, which certified the shatnas testing, had come out. And he said he wanted it sewn back in again, as if to say that it wasn't kosher without it. Well, you're obviously allowed to wear your suit without your shatnas label. The ikri is to have it tested, and if it's certified kosher, you don't actually have the label to say that it's kosher, but some people have some strange ideas.
How do they know that it's new? There are
methods which are used, not just with microscopes. When you burn wool or you burn linen, you get different results. That you can wool singes much more. Under a microscope, they look completely different. Wool has much more little tiny circles in the microscope, whereas linen has more. It looks more like the bones of a skeleton under a microscope. And cotton has a sort of waving pattern under a microscope. They all have very distinct different appearances under a microscope. Nowadays, they use chemicals, which by seeing what chemical reaction is when they mix with it, they can see if it's linen. But there are more sophisticated ways nowadays which can be used to test it.
It's easy to tell. I mean, for a tester, it's easy.
Well, the guy... Yeah, one has to be trained for it to know, but... It is a worthwhile profession to look into, but Gershon did once have a crash course from the local shatnas tester, and he was given a number of ideas, but I don't think Gershon claims to be fully qualified yet in checking your suits. Right.
I remember when Rabbi Posen was still alive, I went to his house, and he showed me exactly.
Yeah, he used to do a quick 2-minute check, and he used to go, "There's your linen," in a nice Cockney accent. Yeah, I remember. Anyway, in the future, Hashem will invite the Tzaddikim to a Seuda in Gan Eden, and at that time, he will be offering us the grapes from the 6 days of creation. And he will say, "Please join in to the Tzaddikim." And that's the time when he will be Megala, the Tameh HaTorah. He will invite us to listen to the reasons given for the din of shatnas. Tzadikim will say to him, "Tishrei Shchinoscha Beinoseinu, may your Shchina dwell amongst us. Please join us in this Seuda when you tell us these amazing secrets of shatnas." And until that happens, we shall have to remain in some doubt, but be happy with these reasons given by Rav Dessler or the Maharal or the Rambam as to what ideas there are behind shatnas. But the Ikka is that we are doing it as the Rotzon Hashem and with the same simcha and devotion, just like any other mitzvah, if not more. Thank you very much.